Top Bins with Twins. It will just be me today, as Paul has some other commitments that he is not going to be able to be on the podcast with me today. But I thought that I would record an episode with you guys, and we could talk about how game week 32 went, the big double game week we've been talking about for a while now, with Crystal Palace and Newcastle doubling. So here at the beginning, I'm just going to talk about how my team performed in game week 32, go through the highs, lows, and ultimate highs of how the week played out. But yeah, we'll get right into it now. So for game week 32, I ended up on a total of 103 points. Yes, you did hear that correctly, 103 points. Really good result there for my FPL team. The average this week was 56, so I managed to more than double the average, which very, very happy with that. I ended up going with a very differential captain. I brought in Harvey Barnes on my wild card, and I captained him. He ends up with a 27-point haul for a total of 54 points with me captaining him. Across those two fixtures against Crystal Palace and Manchester United, he gets a goal and assist against Palace, and then two goals against Manchester United. Ends up on three bonus in the United fixture, and then one bonus against Crystal Palace. I could not be happier with how this result played out. Harvey Barnes was someone that I felt really good about bringing into the team because his underlying stats were better than Jacob Murphy's, who's been returning extremely well as of late. And I felt like it was a good differential option. Whenever I brought Harvey Barnes in, I think he was below 1% owned. There have been a lot of transfers in because of the return he had in the double game week. So his ownership has gone up, but I was able to reap the rewards of that low ownership, boost myself up the ranks. And all around, it was really great to have Barnes in my team. There were a couple places in my team, though, that I feel like underperformed a little bit. And the primary areas for that was penalties. Usually penalties are something that we all want our players to be taking in our teams. That means an easy route to points. Well, in order to get those points, our players have to convert the penalties that they're given. And unfortunately, this week, every penalty that was taken by my team, players in my team, it was failed to be converted. I had Marcus Asensio for his two missed penalties in the double game week. And then I also had Eze for his missed penalty against Newcastle in the second fixture of their double. I cannot begin to tell you all how frustrating it was to have Asensio miss those two penalties. I was, of course, watching the match because I knew I had a good feeling about that fixture for Asensio, that hopefully he'd start, and he did, and then that he would have good returns on top of that. Situationally, could have been a great haul, but fortunately, he gets an assist on the missed penalty that falls to McGinn, ends up on 2 points for the week with two penalties missed. I'll take the assist points, but so frustrating on my end that he doesn't end up on a 15-pointer, which would have absolutely catapulted me up the ranks with his ownership currently. So very frustrating there, but having Eze miss the penalty as well really is frustrating. It's a shame that they weren't able to convert those penalties, but we kind of move forward. Know that the Barnes return was extremely good. Well, it was a good choice, rooted in some really concrete and high expectation reasons for bringing him in, right? I felt like I said earlier, the numbers looked really good. He's been in good positions for Newcastle. Newcastle have been scoring goals like it's just fun to do at this point. They're just casually scoring goals. And it's really strange. I mean, we can talk about this later. I wanted to talk about Isak, but he's found himself in some really good positions. Hasn't quite been converting the way he was for a stretch there over the course of the season. Not sure if he's kind of played himself out of form, or maybe there's a slight injury concern. you never quite know with Isak, but I would also say if you triple captained Isak this week, that's just very negative variance going against you. He had some really, really great positions, as I mentioned just a second ago. So, you know, you win some, you lose some, and sometimes it's just the player goes cold for a game or two. But still, good to get the goal. And if you triple captain him, you get 33 points out of him. That's definitely not a failure at all. Just maybe not exactly what you'd be hoping for. So, good to see that Isak did get his return, though. It did kind of damage my rank. I could tell that, you know, as soon as that goal went in, because I didn't captain this week, that did impact my overall rank, though. But that's fine. You know, I'll take the Harvey Barnes points and I will run. Throughout the rest of my team, I had Emmy Martinez with a clean sheet, so six-pointer. I had Connor Bradley, brought him in on my wild card. So ended up on 9 points with him getting 3 bonus as the Liverpool clean sheet was killed at the end of the match there. Tino Livramento gets an 8-pointer. And then I had Munoz for his -1, which not good. Not good for a double game week, especially with a player who has such high upside. Crystal Palace just did not look at it over this double game week. But so really kind of excited with how the team performed. Looking forward to how my team's going to shake out for game week 33, because we have another double game week approaching. This week in game week 33, we have Aston Villa doubling, we have Man City doubling, Arsenal doubling, and then Crystal Palace doubling as well. Very interesting doubles here. I think the feelings on how things have gone up to this point will most likely be people are going to be very upset with how their Crystal Palace assets have performed. We have Mateta, who was over the course of the double, he ends up getting, 55 minutes against Newcastle and then 45 minutes against Palace. Sorry, not against Palace, against City. That, it's pretty insane how Palace have been performing over the course of the season. And then we go out and we see that they kind of look like the team that started out the season, where they were really struggling, failing to create opportunities. And the craziest thing I will say about this was whenever Crystal Palace start out against Man City in the first fixture of their double and Crystal Palace go up 2-0. If you had the assistant manager on Glasner, you were probably so, so excited to see that. But unfortunately, the fixture completely turned after KDB had his goal and Crystal Palace just couldn't handle it. I think there is a certain layer to this that whenever you look at how Glasner made his tactical changes, it seems like it really had the opposite effect he was intending to. It gave City more room to create and also build up pressure. And as you could see, Crystal Palace couldn't cope. So I will be very interested to see how people are going to be changing their teams with one more transfer, couple days till the deadline. Because if you have a triple up of Crystal Palace, you might not be feeling too good about that going into the double. Perhaps they turn it around and begin to play better. You know, Bournemouth at home, not really. That's a pretty good fixture. Arsenal away, that's a really difficult fixture, especially with Arsenal. They're going to have more time to dedicate to the Premier League with their Champions League tie against Real Madrid being closed out earlier in the week. So we would expect to see Arsenal going a little more full strength against the teams they're playing in the Premier League. So that could be bad for Crystal Palace assets. Across the board, though, I think that a lot of people are going to be investing in Arsenal players and then Man City players. For Man City, if we look at Kevin De Bruyne is someone who is extremely popular in the FPL community right now. He had a pretty big haul Sorry, I'm trying to pull up the stats here. A pretty big haul against Crystal Palace, where he managed to go for 12 points last week. For those 12 points, he had a goal and an assist, ends up on 2 bonus, and then with an XG of 0.47, an XA of 0.38, and an XGI of 0.85. Those stats tell me that KDB is back to his peak fitness. He said after the match that he was playing without pain for the first time in a very long time. And that's going to make a huge difference whenever you look at the psychology and the mentality of players. Anytime a player is out on the pitch and they're not fully comfortable, they're not feeling like they're like themselves, they're going to be holding back, whether or not they're doing so intentionally or not. So seeing him play without the thought of, okay, well, I'm in pain, my body doesn't feel right, I don't trust my body fully, that's going to make a huge difference for him. So it makes sense why we see a lot of people transferring him in for the game week. Currently, for game week 32, his net transfers in are around 3,400 transfers. That will put him at, for the current game week, going into game week 33, he has 204,000 transfers in. That tells me a lot of people are very excited and chasing the upside there, because with the doubles that Man City have, and personally, I think these are the best attacking doubles out there. Man City have Everton away in game week 33 for their first portion of the double, and then they have Aston Villa at home for 33. So whenever we think about that, the biggest question with De Bruyne is, what are his minutes going to look like? If we know he's going to get, let's say, 150 minutes across the two fixtures, I think a lot of people would happily take that with the potential upside of having him to, you know, provide that creativity, that playmaking that he's known for, you know, one of the best midfielders to ever play in the Premier League. And as we all are aware, this could be his last run and will most likely be his last run in the Man City team. So there's a lot of nostalgic factor there as well that could, you know, very easily push people over the edge. If you're just considering bringing him in and then you think about, oh, well, this is the last time I could have Kevin De Bruyne in my team, that's a great reason to bring him into the team. And I think a lot of people, as we continue to get closer to the deadline, will in fact do so. So something to keep an eye on there with Man City. Another question here with Man City that I've been kind of debating for my team is, am I going to add KDB to my team? Am I going to triple up? Because currently I have the setup of Guardiola defensively, and then I also have Marmoush as my striker. Will it be worthwhile to bring in a third Man City player into my team? The huge question here for me is, I have somewhat of a hole in my team after wildcarding in 32, where I brought in Cole Palmer, thinking that Ipswich at home would be a great fixture for him, and of the mindset that in 35, I'll have a really good fixture for him with Everton at home. The main thing here, though, that I'm really kind of concerned about is my team for game week 34 is not going to be good enough if I do, in fact, bring in KDB. My goal was to not use my free hit in 34, but if I use a free transfer going into game week 33, that then is going to require me to burn a transfer, but also bring in someone who blanks in 34, I'm going to be in a very difficult situation with using transfers to get a full team for 34 because of the blank. Currently, if I keep Palmer, I'll have 5 available players in my team, and all with really good fixtures. It would be Palmer with Everton at home, Bradley with Tottenham at home, Livermanto with Ipswich at home, Barnes at home, against Ipswich, and then Esoc with Ipswich at home. All of those fixtures I like a lot, and I would have two free transfers, so I could easily roll this week, go into the blank game week of 34, take a negative eight, and I can get to nine playing players, right? Nine players in my team, and I would be more than fine with that. I'd have a few good captaincy options as well between Esoc, Barnes, maybe even again, probably not, but I do expect the blank in game week 34 to be a lower scoring game week. But I'm kind of hedging my risk there, because what I can do if I do manage to keep my free hit and not use it in 34 is I would use that free hit in 38. That way, the plan is, and the hope is, that in 36 we get a double, and I would use my assistant manager for 35, 36, 37, and then leave the final game week of the season with 38, to where I could use my free hit and, you know, maximize and attack that final day as much as I possibly can by, you know, not caring about the transfers, and I can bring in whatever players I want. If I feel like I want to consolidate rank, I can be very conservative with how I approach that team, but I can also decide that I want to be really risky with it and bring in low owned differentials. I could go for a team across the board of, let's say, under 10% ownership, right? And that would potentially put me in a place to have enormous rank gain. I also think that there's going to be a slight issue across game week 38, because there's not going to be a lot left to play for. As we can see in the relegation zone, that is pretty much a battle that's over at this point. Seems like all the promoted teams are going to be relegated back down to the championship. We'll have Ipswich, Southampton, and Leicester all going back down. It would be nice if at least one of those teams was pushing to get out of the drop zone, but it just does not seem reasonable at this point, with Wolves winning, I think, what is it, four of their last five? That has really kind of separated them. And that fixture, when Wolves won against Ipswich, that was enormous. I really would have personally preferred to see Ipswich win that and keep things a little spicier. But, you know, you have a swing of 6 points there that basically condemned Ipswich to relegation. So, something to keep in mind, right? Because we want to be maximizing our chips, keeping some in our back pocket, but it is difficult at times to find exactly the best way to do it, and also do so in a way that allows us to be creative and not just follow the trends that have been established by content creators and the people who are best at the game. I find that the game's the most fun whenever you think outside the box and manage to, you know, put together a strategy that fits how you like to play the game and how a way that really kind of just motivates you and keeps you interested. So, you know, everyone's different and they kind of enjoy different aspects of the game. So, like I'm saying here, just try to play however you feel works best for you. The other thing I wanted to look at here is, with game week 33 coming up, a lot of people will be using their bench boost, because this is going to be our biggest double of the season. As I said earlier in the episode, we have Ipswich is on the mind after just talking about relegation. So we have Aston Villa doubling, we have Crystal Palace doubling, we have Arsenal doubling, and we also have Man City doubling, as we have previously talked about. One other player, along with KDB, in the midfield position that's going to be very popular to be transferred in is Bukayo Saka. Saka is an incredible talent. He put in a really good performance, even though he missed a penalty in the midweek against Real Madrid in the UCL. He's also going to be heavily transferred in my opinion. Currently, he's sitting at, let's see, he's the most transferred in player currently. And he has, as of recording this episode on Thursday, he has 311,000 transfers into people's teams. This is something that, while I think the mentality on this has shifted a lot, since the Real fixture ended. The reason why I think this makes a really big difference here is because a lot of people were purely focused on the doubles and worried about what the fixture with Real Madrid was going to do to Saka's minutes in those doubles. Now that that fixture's out of the way, we know that Arsenal will be advancing in the UCL. This is going to put us in a position where I really think that Saka is going to be starting these Premier League fixtures because, for one, they're going to want to get minutes in his legs. I think that's really important. Make sure he stays up on his match fitness. And it's not entirely the preservation mentality that we were seeing the previous game week, where it's like, okay, let's just make sure that that Saka is able to play in this fixture, that he's healthy enough, because I really, my concern here is that he's not going to be playing all 90 minutes, though. That lack of game time could be detrimental because we could easily see in, it could be detrimental, but ultimately, I don't know if Saka playing all 180 minutes in the double is necessarily what we're going for, because with Ipswich away and Crystal Palace at home, Ipswich have conceded goals. We know that defensively they can set up in a pretty resolute way, but they also like to get forward too. So there's a dichotomy there where I think Arsenal are going to control the game and have a fair amount of chances. With that in mind, Saka could be a great option. And in that second fixture with Crystal Palace at home, I could really see Arsenal giving Crystal Palace a difficult time. And we've seen what Crystal Palace did over this double. Not the best, but then again, Crystal Palace have been a little bit of a seesaw team throughout the course of the season where they've been really good, they've been really bad. Maybe they kind of, you know, level back out and put in some better performances in the double game week 33. We'll just have to wait to see on that. But I would not expect for the level to continue to drop the way it has. So Saka being a good option, I do completely agree with the market here that with all these transfers in, Saka is a good person to have in your team. And I, like I said earlier, I don't think you need to get all 180 minutes out of him for him to be returning. He could easily play, let's say, 60 minutes in the first fixture and then 60 in the next, and he could still end up on a, you know, 20, 25 point. That wouldn't shock me at all. And give him that armband, those could be really, really good points to have in the team because currently his ownership sits at 24%. It's a little bit higher than I thought it would be, but I think some of that comes from the residual ownership from managers that had him early on in their teams and they've stopped playing the game at this point. So if you can take a look at the active ownership that he has, I would expect that that's probably more around 15, maybe 15 to 18% would be my guess. But yeah, Saka, great option to have in the team. I currently have Trossard in my team, and I will be sticking with him. The hope is that he does start this fixture. Perhaps he plays as the false nine. Marino might play a little bit deeper, and that would be a good position for him to be in because I could easily see him scoring some goals over the next week, which would be great for the FPL team, in my opinion. Yeah, so on top of all that, I think that with Aston Villa, it's going to be a bit tricky to predict who's going to be starting in the double. As we've seen, Marcus Rashford almost seems like the preferred number nine at the moment for Unai Emery. Ollie Watkins came in and put in a really good performance over the weekend that saw him return with a goal. Beautifully taken goal, by the way. He really, I mean, that was an incredible volley from an incredibly long and direct pass, and he did it insanely well. But the frustrating thing, if you're a Watkins owner, is that he didn't start in Champions League. So maybe it's the knee injury that's causing him some issues where they're worried about the amount of time that he's putting into his legs. Maybe they're managing his minutes. But it seems kind of strange. You thought that he would start UCL if he was the first choice striker. And as we saw in UCL, Rashford did a very good job of creating chances for his teammates, looked very lively. While he didn't quite find the returns or the results that we would be preferring for him to have, he still did look very good. So he's passing the eye test, but any asset with Aston Villa is going to be a roll of the dice. I have Asensio. He was almost my first rage transfer out for my team for this season, but I decided against it because they have the double. Aston Villa have Newcastle at home and Man City away. I expect that Newcastle and Aston Villa fixture, the first leg of the double for Aston Villa, to be a really, really fun watch. I think both those teams are going to go up and down the pitch and put each other in some uncomfortable positions defensively. I expect a lot of goals. I would not expect to see a ton of, you know, a clean sheet for either team in this fixture. So if you were thinking about captaining one of the players from Newcastle or Aston Villa for this, I would not recommend doing so. But that is your prerogative if you decide that you want to give that a shot. So yeah, I do personally think that Asensio will start in the double, just because he was rested in UCL and he has been in really good form, minus the penalties as of late. If we look at his returns, he had a 15-pointer in game week 26. He had a 12-pointer in game week 30. And in 32 against Southampton away, he probably should have had a 15-pointer as well. Just something to keep in mind that if he's already in your team, you haven't rage transferred him out yet. If he was in your team for game week 32, I wouldn't transfer him out just because it feels like he's an important part of what Aston Villa are trying to do. But if I could go back, I would probably decide to bring Rodgers in on my wild card for when I wild card in game week 32. Take that for what you want, but I think that probably offers a good level set on thinking on what to do with Aston Villa assets. Another part of my team that I am trying to figure out the best way to manage is Connor Bradley. I haven't even talked about him yet, but Liverpool top the league at the moment, closing in on getting their first Premier League title in quite a while. If you asked a Liverpool fan, they'd probably say quite a while. So the question here that I am asking myself, reports are coming out that Trent is now back in training. I think he's in full squad training. They did, some reporters I was looking at did mention that they think that this week will come a little bit too early for Trent. So that makes me feel good about having Connor Bradley for Leicester away, which is an incredible fixture. We could easily see Liverpool put a lot of goals past Leicester with how poor they've been as of late. My concern, though, is do I go ahead and bring in Bradley? Well, I already have Bradley. Do I address the potential issue now, or do I wait? And I think the best thing to do with Connor Bradley is leave him in your team until it becomes an actual problem that you have to deal with. Because that 9-pointer was really, really nice to have in the team. He ended up, he's currently below 1% selected. That's huge rank gains if you can get those points in your team. And I was fortunate enough to have that, thankfully. But I also don't want to end up with a benching for him in game week 34, especially if I'm in a position where I'm taking a negative 8 to just fill 9 players. If that's my issue and I'm worried about Bradley not playing in game week 34, maybe I get ahead of it. I'm not sure. As you can tell, I'm kind of just thinking through my thoughts here live on the podcast. But the best way to approach this, as I was saying earlier, I really do think this is going to be the best way to do it, is just wait until it becomes an actual issue. If I feel like in game week 34, it's not going to be, it's something that will be a problem for my team in 34, then I'll address that then. And I can easily do that. That's not a problem. So just something to keep in mind. I just thought about this, but you all are probably sitting there thinking, well, Luke had a good game week, so be it. How did Paul do? Paul ended up on 75 points. His top returner of the game week was Nick Pope. Nick Pope ended on 15 points. That's a great goalkeeper haul. He's currently owned by 5.5% of the game, so you're getting really nice return on those points right there. He ended up captaining Isak, so gets 22 points from him. All of his strikers returned this week, 7 points from Marmoush, 6 from Strand Larsen, and then 6 from Salah. Eze was 6 in his missed penalty. And then blanks from Saka, Rashford, Saliba, and Munoz. And then wrapping up the team with Tino Livramento with an 8-pointer for his team. The one other thing that we do need to mention about Paul's team for game week 32 is that he unfortunately did bench Ryan Aitnori's return. He has 14 points on the bench from him, and that would have been really nice to have in his team. Would have put him on 89 points for the week. And that, you know, that's really nice rank gain, right? So, you know, it's unfortunate, but I think, you know, Paul's has been having a bit of a benching nightmare as of late. He, over the past 2 game weeks, he's missed out on, 31 points over 2 game weeks. Not ideal, but the thing is, it's all a learning experience in FPL. If he's not making the right decisions now, hopefully he's incorporating that into his decision-making process. And yeah, he can be better for next season. So, yep. Okay. So the other thing I want to look at here are some underlying stats that could help inform your decision-making process for game week 33. Let me get my notes pulled up right here. So the first thing we're going to look at is XG stats for individual players going back to the beginning of March. These players that we are looking at here have been really kind of the ones that you would expect, right? That are putting in good performances for their team. Sorry, I can't find my notes. Here we go. Okay. So for expected stats since the beginning of March, and to be clear, this is starting March 4th. The player that's leading the Premier League in XG is none other than Alexander Isak. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the podcast, that Isak has been very, very good for Newcastle this entire season. But as of the past couple weeks to month or so, he's starting to underperform a little bit and not meet those insanely high standards that he established about halfway through the season. He has an XG of 4.16 since March 4th with 2 goals in the Premier League. That's something that is going to be really frustrating for a lot of managers out there, because over the course of the season, we've seen him be a player that not only meets his expected goals, but overperforms his XG. So earlier in the season, if he was getting 4.16 XG, we would expect 6, 7, maybe even 8 goals. He's been that clinical of a finisher. And now that we're not quite seeing that, that makes it difficult for managers, because we would expect for him to really kind of keep that form. But then again, if he is tailing off a little bit, maybe we need to hedge our bets a little bit and perhaps not captain him over the course of the rest of the season. Secondly, and this, you know, I did not make this up. Do not think that I made this up just for the sake of my captaincy last week. Second on the XG list since the beginning of March is none other than Harvey Barnes with an XG of 3.83. He has 4 goals to show for that, and then another 2 assists. Well, actually, for FPL, he has 3 assists. One of them on the cross that he made that got deflected in, that own goal is counted as an assist in FPL. So he has 4 goals and 3 assists for FPL teams. That's a great option to have in the team. If if you're thinking about going a bit differential, I know that Newcastle's fixtures aren't looking incredible, and the ever-looming threat of Anthony Gordon coming back into the starting 11 is there. But with him in this form, I do not think Gordon's going to be able to displace him. So Gordon, I mean, Barnes is someone to keep an eye on. I'm a little biased there because of how he returned. And yes, I am going to have to get a Harvey Barnes kit out of respect for him being an incredible captaincy option. So thank you, Harvey Barnes. Shout out there. Next on the list for XG, we have Evan Nilsson with Bournemouth. He has an XG of 3.52 and 4 goals. I was fortunate enough to get three of those 4 goals. And no, I think I got all 4 of those since the beginning of March into my team. He has 4 goals and playing really well. He is a striker that I love watching to play. He plays with a lot of energy, and I really like his link-up play. He's pretty good with the ball at his feet, but he reminds me of Harry Kane in the way that he's always finding the right position, in the way that he kind of just lurks at the back post or knows when to make a deceptive run in behind a center back when their head turns. He's very sneaky and sly, and that gets him in positions where he'll just have a simple tap in because he puts in that extra effort. And I really, really respect that. But it's also great for our FPL teams because he's having these really high XG opportunities whenever he is getting chances. And that makes him more likely to convert those chances. Bournemouth do not have the best fixtures coming up, though. So I think he might be a little bit of a swerve. I don't think I would recommend anyone going there. But hey, the numbers look good. So maybe if Bournemouth are able to continue to turn the corner like they have whenever they won against Fulham, then maybe we can expect to see him starting to return even more than he has the past couple game weeks. So someone to keep on the radar there. And then we have João Pedro with an XG of 3.33 and 3 goals since the beginning of March. And then none other than Paul's favorite striker this season is Strand Larsson with an XG of 3.05 and 5 goals to show for that. That's really impressive if you think about he's highly overperforming his XG. So, you know, if you've had Strand Larsson in your team and you're getting the points from his returns, kudos to you because he has been tearing it up as of late and really showing that there's a future there for Wolves after Cunha's probably sold this summer. So great job, everyone, if you had him in your team. So there's other XG stats here. Marmoush, Asensio, Salah, Muniz with Fulham, and then Eze are all on the rest on the list here for top XG. For XA, I'm going to give you all a second here to think and kind of wonder on who you think is leading the XA for the Premier League since the beginning of March. Yes, you guessed it. It is Jacob Murphy. He has created an XA of 2.37 and 3 assists to show for that. He might even have another FPL assist. The stats I'm looking at does not capture that, so I'll check that real quick. But Murphy has been in the form of his life. He has, over the course of the season, he now has 8 goals and 11 assists. It's actually insane how many assists he has. With those 11 assists, he has an expected assist of 4.92. So he's more than doubled his expected assist for the season. And I think there's one culprit for why that is, right? If we look at Alexander Isak and how he has been overperforming his numbers, not for the last couple of weeks, but over the course of the season, I think that has probably given him a couple assists that, you know, potentially might not have been there if another striker was playing with him. But nevertheless, 8 goals and 11 assists with a price tag of 5.2 million is absolutely insane. Jacob Murphy has been one of the best value picks of the season so far. And I would also put Morgan Rodgers up there as well as one of the best value picks. Morgan Rodgers has not only is he a great player, but man, does he pass the eye test. He is so fun to watch play with the way that he carries the ball at his feet. It is absolutely incredible. I'm surprised that more top clubs are not just clamoring to get Rodgers. I think his release clause is around £70 million or so. If I was someone like City, Arsenal, Manchester United, I think he'd be a great fit at Spurs personally. I would be clamoring to get. I could see someone like Bayern Munich coming in and trying to get him, frankly. But, you know, Bayern Munich have a lot of young talent at the moment, so probably not. But as I was talking about, the expected assist here, Jacob Murphy leading the way with that. Second on the list, we have Luis Díaz with an XA of 2.24 and two assists to show for that. Next on the list, we have a defender. Take a second. Think if you can guess it. Yes, it is Reyn Aitnori with Wolves. Aitnori has had a couple massive hauls the last few game weeks and is looking like the FPL asset that we thought he could be at the beginning of the season. He's such a creative fullback with how he plays. And over the past four game weeks, he has returns of 14 points, 2 points, 8 points, and then 2 points. This is telling me the way he creates chances and does a pretty good defensive job. If he gets a clean sheet, he's most likely going to be in a position where he's very capable of getting multiple bonus points. So someone to keep an eye on if you don't have him on in your team currently. The only problem that I have with this is I do not love Wolves' fixtures for the end of the season. They go Manchester United away, Leicester at home, Man City away, Brighton at home, Crystal Palace away, and then Brentford at home. Those fixtures kind of scare me a little bit for Wolves. They have been much better, but I worry that the last three or four game weeks of the season, they're not going to have much to play for. Might start playing some younger players, and you really never know how that plays out for them. So something to keep an eye on there. The next player is on the expected assist list is Alex Iwobi. Then we go to Bruno Fernandes with an XA of 1.93 and two assists to show for that. I would not recommend going to any Manchester United assets. I think they do have a couple of nice fixtures with Wolves at home in 33, Bournemouth away in 34, Brentford away in 35, West Ham, and then West Ham at home in 36. Those are some good fixtures, but I just don't think we can quite trust Manchester United assets currently. So with that being said, United would be an avoid for me. Bruno Fernandes always going to be someone who is near the returns, but for me, it's a pass. There's other good options out there that can kind of help fill that void. So that's going to pretty much do it for expected assist and expected goals. The other interesting thing that I want to mention, since the beginning of March, Newcastle United has been dominating the Premier League in creating chances and finishing their chances. We can see here that Newcastle United have an XG of 12.3 with 15 goals scored over the course of that time. So not only are they creating a lot of expected goals, they're overperforming that expected number and converting their chances at a really high clip. This makes us feel like, A, we want to have a piece of that pie, right? Because if everyone on the team is performing at an extremely high level, then not having players in our team is going to be detrimental for us in FPL because they are scoring goals like crazy right now. And most importantly, they also do play in game week 34. For the double. In 34, they have probably the best fixture, which is Ipswich at home. I would argue that maybe Wolves is a little bit better. They have Leicester at home, but both of those fixtures are going to be great options, and I would fully expect for free hit 34 to see teams tripling up on both of those teams. So tripling up on Newcastle and then tripling up on Wolves. Well, at least doubling up on Wolves, because I think maybe we see Strand Larson and Aiton Orion teams. Maybe we see Cunha. Maybe we see double Wolves strikers, right? We see Cunha and Strand Larson in a lot of free hit teams. That would not surprise me at all. So something to keep an eye on and play around with if you're looking at building out your free hit team for 34. So yeah, the other notable point here, I think, from looking at teams' expected goals, Bournemouth have been really unlucky. They have an expected points of 9.81. So this statistical calculation would predict them to end up with 10 points over their last five fixtures. And they have an unfortunate 5 points to show for that. So Bournemouth have been a little unlucky, and the expected numbers have not, they've looked good, but the actual way the matches have played out have not worked out well for them. So yeah, but other call outs here, Nottingham Forest have really kind of dropped off a cliff with how they're creating chances with Chris Wood out. And I think not only are they creating less chances, the main thing here is that they don't have that hyper clinical finisher in Chris Wood, who was just finishing every single chance that he got in any fixture they were playing. So not having him is really damaging them, but I would expect to see them start to be playing better. And I really do like the fixtures as well, because, Forest have Tottenham at home, Tottenham away, Brentford at home, Crystal Palace away, Leicester at home, and then West Ham away, with Chelsea at home on the final day of the season in game week 38. This is going to be a great team, I think, for us to invest in, especially in the midfield, is what I'm thinking. We can go for one of those midfielders, get the right pick, and hopefully see some big returns near here at the end of the season. I do expect a lot of people to have at least one Forest defender as their fixtures get better, like I was just talking about. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on that, but Forest, someone who have been really good over the course of the season, maybe their legs are just running a little, just kind of run into the ground a little bit, I think. So, like I said, keep an eye on it, and we'll kind of reevaluate Forest as we go into game week 34. As of now, for 33, all priority is going to be on doublers. So I hope that this podcast has helped you all think through some of the options that, you know, really kind of stand out. Some of the players that might, you know, complement the final piece of your game week team. Yeah, and I hope that this will help you all kind of piece together exactly what you want to be doing with your teams for game week 33, because as you can see from game week 32, the doubles are a great time to go for some rank gains and really kind of just polish off those overall ranks and climb up those mini league tables as we near the end of the season. So hope you guys really enjoyed this podcast, and Paul and I will both be back next week to talk about the blank game week 34, get you ready for that, and really help you kind of push to that final finish line that we're approaching now in game week 34. Thank you all for joining this episode of Top Bins with Twins, and we look forward to hearing from you all after the episode and being back with you next week. So thank you all very much for your time, and we'll be back with you soon.